Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregenauer with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Peter Bregen. Hello. It's going to be Thanksgiving. I hope all of you will have profoundly meaningful and good Thanksgivings. Now, one of the things that I enjoy most in life is meeting new and wonderful people. I've had some opportunity to do that lately because I've been invited more than usual to speak around the country. In 2 weeks, I'll be in a beautiful resort in Texas where I've been invited to talk. You can find this stuff online at Bregen.com. And a few weeks ago, I went to a conference put on by Pam Popper, who is a person who believes that nutrition is a key to good living, both physical and emotional. And I had just a wonderful time with Pam, whom I really met for the first time, and with some of her friends and colleagues. One of the individuals she works closely with, I'd never met before, and he's our guest today, and his name is Walter E. Jacobson. Walter Jacobson, he's a psychiatrist. He's actually did his undergraduate work here in Ithaca, where I am, at Cornell. I wasn't here at the time. And he's got, you know, really good credentials. Medical College of Wisconsin, then UCLA, training program in psychiatry. But the interesting thing was, and very appropriate to Thanksgiving, was the talk he gave at Pam Popper's conference was on forgiveness. It was on how to move yourself along in life spiritually through forgiveness and through other moral, ethical, spiritual approaches to life. And in keeping with that, he's authored his first book on the subject of Forgive to Win. He's the medical director for the Wellness Forum, which I think, and he can tell us more about this, is developing from Pam Popper's work, and we can also talk about her work today. And on top of it all, Walter is just a very nice person. Hello, Walter.
Hey, Peter.
Welcome on to the show. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm sort of relaxing, recovering from a flu-like illness, and looking forward to Thanksgiving. And here you are, a really wonderful spiritual companion on my show. So happy Thanksgiving to you.
Well, thank you to you, too. And thank you for inviting me to be a guest on your show today.
Well, thanks for coming aboard. And I'd like you to just begin with what's on your mind and what you'd like to talk about.
Well, you know, I saw a couple, actually a family yesterday, and it really struck me more than ever how family members who are really close and love each other can be so really inconsiderate and insensitive and kind of abusive. They take each other for granted, and they behave in ways that, you know, they treat people, strangers and acquaintances, better than their family members. And it really saddened me, and I was trying to guide them to really find other solutions to the way they engage each other and the way they solve problems. And along the lines of Thanksgiving, it made me appreciate the importance of family at Thanksgiving time. And families come together, and they are generous and loving at that time. But what we need to do is really carry that over to pretty much every day. We've got to really be more sensitive and more loving and more compassionate, more generous to our family and our bigger family, our family of humanity.
I'm with you. I'm with you so much. And I think it's a very good topic for you to continue on. And I want to say in launching you that you are in private practice in Los Angeles. So Los Angeles, from an area we get a number of calls looking for help, we now have a new referral there, Walter, who is also on our advisory council now. So it's a beginning of a lovely collaboration. So talk some more about this subject. I mean, take off on this forgive to win and what you'd like to help that family with and our listeners with.
Sure. Well, you know, basically, I think that what happens in family dynamics and dysfunction is part of it is that resentments build up over time, and people don't really know how to resolve their issues, so they sort of get swept under the rug, and they never really address the resentments that they have. And so then what happens is their resentments come out in inappropriate ways, and in or perhaps abusive ways or unloving ways or inconsiderate ways or, you know, passive-aggressive ways. They don't really know what they're doing, and it's because of resentments that are unconscious. There are harsh judgments, and the whole key to the idea of forgiveness is to let go of all that. Is to, you know, let go of your judgments, to develop a stronger a sense of acceptance. Despite how people are behaving, and despite what has happened in the past, let go of the past, forgive, overlook, give people the benefit of the doubt. The book Forgive to Win is about all that. It's about the idea that if our lives aren't satisfying, it's because of things we're doing. And usually things, ways in which we're getting in our own way, ways in which we sabotage ourselves through our harsh judgments, our prejudices, resentments and grievances, and our lack of generosity. So just to kind of establish the premise of Forgive to Win is that if you really want to heal yourself and heal your life, get out of yourself. Get out of your ego. Forgive others. Accept others, and be of service to others. Kind of shift the paradigm from what's in it for me to how can I help you.
I like that. Now, it won't always work with the other person. So how do you deal with that?
Well, you accept the fact that people are at their own individual levels psychologically and spiritually. You know, we're all on a path, and some people aren't going to respond in the way that we want. But that's not the point. The point is for us to continue to be role models. The point is for us to continue to see past the way people are behaving and see the good in them, see the God in them, see the love in them, despite how they're behaving. And when we can do that, again, it makes it more possible for there to be a transformational moment. It's more possible that people will come up to our vibration when we are in a state of acceptance, when we can accept the fact that, okay, they're contracted right now, they're resistant right now, they're kind of stuck right now. But I don't have to badger them. I don't have to try to prove that I'm right and they're wrong. You know, I really want to rise above the battlefield. You know, I'd rather be happy than necessarily have to prove that I'm right. And so changing people and family and the whole process, it takes time and it takes patience. But as we take the high ground, as we continue to maintain that higher level of calm and tolerance and patience and compassion, for they know not what they do, it gets better. Relationships do over time heal. People do start to learn better ways. But if we get caught up in the dynamic of the battle, of making people wrong so we can our ego can get satisfied, then nobody wins.
Let me tell you a secret about myself and sort of a paradoxical way this has worked for me. Because I think that some people listening will get the idea that forgiveness leads to enslavement. You end up with people you're unhappy with, jobs you're unhappy with, bosses you're unhappy with, and a world you're unhappy with. But it doesn't work like that, at least for me. As I've become more accepting of who other people really are, that is, what their limits are, what their abilities are, how much they can love, how much they can accept love, how much they want to be independent and yet relating. The more I've become more realistic about people and less judgmental and more accepting, the more I've allowed myself to choose not to be with some people. Whereas when I was judging people all the time, it was a part of the process of remaining stuck with them. So I would judge them and be angry, and they would judge me and be angry, or we'd be disappointed with each other. Nothing ever got really marvelous. There weren't great moments together. And when I then began, well, I don't want to be angry anymore. I don't want to be judgmental anymore. What I found is that I tended to let go of situations and circumstances and sometimes people who really, in a way, either didn't have my interests at heart or just couldn't be with me the way I wanted to be. And I've got a much broader circle of people I care about now that I'm more forgiving. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. I think people have a misconception that forgiveness is weakness, and that if they forgive, that means that on some level they're condoning what has happened to them, or on some level they're saying, you know, treat me like a doormat, or it means that they have to tolerate, you know, a toxic situation or toxic people, and that's not the case at all. Forgiveness is a very empowering thing which releases you of your own emotional pain and baggage and your resentments. But it doesn't mean that you have to hang out with people. It doesn't mean you have to tolerate being abused or mistreated. It's like go in peace. I forgive you from a distance. I don't have to have you in my close sphere of influence. You know, in general, my philosophy is, you know, care for everyone, love everyone, you know, be kind to everyone, but that doesn't mean you have to hang out with these people. I try to create a sphere of influence of people in my lives who are positive and compassionate and synergistic, you know, and really considerate to each other, and that's the people I want to hang around with. But the rest of the people, I forgive, I let go. And like you say, you let go of the judgments, you let go of your ego, and you're free. It's amazing how, you know, people spend so much time being angry and resentful and bitter, and they're, you know, and their guts are churning and they can't sleep at night, and they're just doing this to themselves. They're kind of, you know, reinventing their victimhood. And forgiveness is about letting go of your sense of victimhood and being free of it and letting go of any kind of need for vengeance or retaliation. Now, it doesn't mean that you condone other people's behaviors. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't be held responsible for behaviors that are inappropriate. But you don't have to be the judge and you don't have to be the executioner. And like what I think what you were saying also is we need to stop needing to change people. It's not our job to change people. It's our job to change ourselves and heal ourselves. And ironically, in the process, this is how we will change people.
Well, I think that's really, really true. That a lot of helping people change is, in a sense, becoming the change you want to see in other people.
Yeah, yeah. Your work in empathy is all about that, is how I look at it, is empathy is really, that's a huge transformational process. When people get a sense that you can relate to how they're feeling, you are compassionate for what they're going through, there's tremendous healing and change in that, oftentimes without a word even being spoken.
You know, Walter, and I'm talking again to Walter E. Jacobson, a psychiatrist. Like me, you've been through a very traditional, high-level education, Cornell University, Wisconsin Medical, UCLA. You're a psychiatrist. Like me, you're Jewish and from the East Coast originally, and here I am in New York State's version of Middle America, living in the country in upstate New York, and you've gone off to L.A. And I'd like to hear something about, and I think folks listening to you would be interested in how you've begun and this transformation and perhaps what stage of it you're in, away from a traditional medical model and toward this very loving model of how to help people.
Yeah, well, when I have sort of a strange path, what happened was when I went to medical school, I was conflicted. I actually, I wasn't like totally 100% into becoming a doctor or becoming a psychiatrist. I mean, that's something that I wanted to do. I've always had a desire to help people, but I was conflicted. Part of me also wanted to be a writer and a performer and so more in the creative expressive mode. And so I actually did 6 months of an internship in Tucson, and then I quit medicine. I gave it all up. I burnt the bridge, and I pursued a different career. And I, ironically and strangely, magically, a couple of weeks after I quit, I got involved in a alternative weekly newspaper in Tucson, and was writing a weekly medical column. It was called To Your Health, and the publisher didn't know what he was doing. And I had more experience from being a newspaper editor in high school. I knew how to like run ads and do a masthead and do the whole works and edit and stuff. And so I actually became the publisher of this small independent paper and kept it alive for 2 years. And it was an incredible, invigorating, you know, experience. It was very liberating. And in that time that I was away from medicine, I also started my spiritual journey. And it was during those years I started to read a variety of books about different religions and different spiritual approaches and different mystical approaches to life. And in that process,
I'm hearing a theme of Course of Miracles. Did you read that? Get involved?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And ultimately, I became a student of A Course in Miracles. And one of the things that the Course speaks about is there's only two choices, love or fear. And it's very cognitive in that sense. And the Course says that only the mind can be sick, and only the mind is in need of healing. And all of these themes came back to me. And what happens is I then moved to Los Angeles and did another many years working in performing and in writing, etc. And then when I had finally sort of burnt off a lot of ego and a lot of narcissism, and I was pretty much steeped in A Course in Miracles as a student, and Marianne Williamson was out here at the time, and I spent a lot of time at her lectures and absorbing her work and her ideas, and then I decided, you know, now I want to do it. Now I want to get back into medicine. Now I want to practice this kind of psychiatry where we can really heal people and make a difference by healing them spiritually through forgiveness and acceptance and love and compassion. And when I went back, the doors opened wide, and it was unbelievable. There was no resistance, and I just fell in love with the whole process of helping people and learning like a technique of therapy that works for me and for my patients. And now I love it, and it's led to the book and to my meeting you and all sorts of other positive things to come.
Tell me about your involvement with Pam Popper, this incredible woman who is an expert in nutrition, an amazing entrepreneur, able to fend off all kinds of resistance to her honesty out in the political world. How'd you get involved with her, and what are you doing in regard to her? I think because the Wellness Forum is really her work, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, what happened, I met Pam a few years ago. There was a project, a pilot project that was being done in Sacramento for people who were living at a poverty level and were eating, you know, and their nutrition was just horrible. And they had no clue, and they were overweight, and they had diabetes and hypertension and elevated cholesterol, and were on like a dozen drugs. And this pilot program was put together to bring speakers to these people to teach them about a healthier lifestyle and more specifically a plant-based nutrition idea. Pam was there giving a talk about plant-based nutrition, and they had invited me to be up there and talk about how to deal with resistance, within oneself to change so that you don't sabotage the program, and how to deal with resistance you might come across when you're trying to change from other people, friends and family who may love you and care about you but may have another agenda and may derail you. So we met, and it was great. And then she invited me to the Los Angeles premiere of Forks Over Knives, the movie that talks about, hey, yeah, eat a plant-based diet and avoid getting your chest cut open. And so then she had always had this percolating in her mind, this idea that, okay, if you can, you know, change people's diet, and through that they're going to heal them, their body, and then the diabetes is going to calm down, and the hypertension is going to calm down, and they're going to get off all these medicines, what if we can do it with the mind and the brain? What if we can get people off off psychiatric medicines, and then they'll be able to like manage their emotions, their impulses, their anxieties, and you know, get off these toxic drugs. And she approached me and she gave me two books, and one of them was your book, Your Drug May Be Your Problem. And that was my first experience with getting to know you and your philosophy and your work. And as soon as I read your book, I called Pam up. I said, I'm in. If I can help to do this, I will. And so what happened is we have created a program that's being sponsored and produced by Pam and the Wellness Forum, and it's called Emotional Wellness 101. And the idea is people... Basically, the reason why people are put on medicines in the first place, psychiatric medicines, is usually because there's something going on emotionally. They may have mood swings, emotional upheavals that they have difficulty coping with. They have anxieties. They don't know how to manage them. They have impulsivities and behaviors. They don't know how to manage. And so either they decide or someone else decides for them to go on medications. And so the whole idea of Emotional Wellness 101 is to teach people tools to self-regulate, if they have depression or anxiety or anger or impulsivities, they can use cognitive tools, spiritual tools, positive psychology tools to calm down the engine, to bring those emotions back to a baseline, and then we get them off the drugs. So once they have the tools so they can regulate their emotions and their anxieties, then we, along the lines that you have advised in your books, we start to taper them off the drugs and get them off. So this is a pilot program that's starting December 4th, where for the first time we're starting this this program. It's sort of an interactive program that's done through conference calls, and it's really exciting. And you're right, Pam is unbelievable dynamo of energy and positive, and she's incredibly, you know, savvy business-wise. She's got a lot of courage to battle the establishment, and I'm just thrilled to be on board and to be a part of this program that she's, you know, created.
Now, how would people get to Emotional Wellness 101? Because I think this is open to people throughout the country, right? I mean, it's going to be done online.
Oh, yeah. Well, they can email Pam Popper at msn.com and ask for information about it. And then she'll email back, the basic information about the program. By the way, the program is not just for people that want to get off medications. It's actually for anybody who, you know, wants to learn, have a toolkit of tools to really maintain, to establish emotional wellness, to really improve their lives and make their lives more satisfying in general, make their relationships more satisfying. So it's a toolkit that anybody can gain from. So you don't necessarily have to be on medications for it. There's two parts of the program. One is just a short, compact program where you do the tools. And then the other program is, okay, after you've learned the tools and practiced them and we've helped you with them, then there's the extended period where you get off the meds. So it's Pam Popper at MSN.com. If you request information about Emotional Wellness 101, she'll send it to you.
That's great. And are you working with her in the college that she's developing? Is this a part of that?
No. This is just a very circumscribed project. This is a solo project. I would love to be, you know, hopefully down the road I will be more involved in work that she does. Hopefully you will too. Hopefully both of us will work together in the future. So I see Pam as sort of a lightning rod. You know, she attracts people of like mind and passion and spirit and then puts them to work. And so, it gets them together. So right now I'm not part of this college that she's putting together, but it is quite profound that she is, you know, creating an independent, program that's going to be credentialed, that's going to be a real, you know, that's really going to train people in a really healthy way. Because, you know, a lot of the psychiatrists, a lot of doctors are trained in a very narrow-minded way to just believe what they're spoon-fed about pharmacology and science and mind-body. And so we need alternative, you know, educational institutions.
How are your ideas evolving in terms of medication?
I'm definitely, it's in the forefront of my consciousness. I'm turning away people now who insist on medications, because I don't want to be a part of that. And I'm starting to train people who I have on medicines to start to develop these tools that I've worked on for the emotional wellness. And in fact, I got a referral from you today, for someone who was, schizophrenic here in Los Angeles, 24-year-old, and I'm going to talk to the mother tonight about getting him into therapy to start working on the tools and to help him get off the medicine. So I am definitely on track. It's, you know, it can't happen overnight, but I'm totally, you know, reorienting my thinking to along your lines and to really practice what I preach and get my patients off these meds.
Well, that's really absolutely wonderful. I would like, we're going to be going to break in a couple of minutes. I would like for the next half hour after the break to open up the opportunity for you to talk more about how you help people, what you believe a good life is about, how you've evolved, and just, you know, this is Thanksgiving. Let's help people celebrate and enjoy and be grateful for what they have.
All right.
And this is Peter Bregan, and you're listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour. My guest and friend, psychiatrist from Los Angeles, Walter E. Jacobson. His website is walterjacobsonmd.com, walterjacobsonmd.com. His book is Forgive to Win, with an exclamation point. And let's just chat, Walter, starting with you again. You know, what is life about? What is therapy about? What do we need to know?
Well, I think life is about letting go of your ego, letting go of a sense of separateness from others, letting go of the idea of competition, the idea of scarcity or lack. I believe there is infinite abundance in the universe, and there's enough for everybody, and that the key is to share and not compete, and to join and not divide. It's so obvious in the, you know, the way our country is now, that there's so much divisiveness, and from that divisiveness, there's so much hatred and animosity and aggression. It's really sad, because we've forgotten that more than that, we're all Americans. We're all, you know, we're all one people on the planet, and so I think life and the purpose of life, the meaning of life, is to grow. In terms of accepting and appreciating that we are all in this together, we are all one, we are all part of you know, of the universe or of God or whatever you want to call it, and we have an obligation to each other, even if we disagree with how each other behaves or the choices they make. We have an obligation to accept each other and not try to destroy or minimize each other. We have an obligation to let go of our harsh judgments, particularly since, ironically, many of our harsh judgments are really just projections of the toxic, you know, unconscious thoughts we have about ourselves that we're just projecting and pointing the finger at others in order to, you know, unconsciously let go of a lot of self-loathing. So the key is to love and accept and forgive others and let go of this ego, which believes in limitation and scarcity and lack. And again, if you have more, then I'll have less, so I better take from you. This is very sick mentality, and we need to change it. And the only way to change it, again, is for each of us to get our own house in order, for each of us to learn how to recognize our ego, recognize when we're using our defense mechanisms inappropriately to attack others, like denial and displacement, where we attack other people who are totally innocent because we're angry at our life or at other people, you know, and the projection of our own inner self-loathing onto other people and see them as demons, and then we scapegoat them. We've got to become more aware and more conscious of these of our behaviors. And that, you know, and change our behaviors. And the way we change our behaviors is to change our minds, is to make better choices in our mind about how we look at the world, you know, and we can look at it positive or negative. You know, we can see a world of attack, or we can see a world of loving beings and who want to cooperate together. So it's, you know, I think we've been at this for a very long time, trying to find inner peace. But that's the only way we're going to find peace in the world, is first to establish individually, one by one, inner peace.
Well, and I don't think that that is something that keeps us from being reformers. I think, in fact, it can liberate us to stand up on issues, because the basic same message is given by Gandhi, by Martin Luther King, by many, many people who have helped change the world, and, of course, Jesus and some of the prophets. So this doesn't mean don't stand up on principles with people and speak your mind and take stands, but it means you let go of the anger and the animosity and the judgmentalness. I think one of the main reasons I'm still able to do all kinds of stressful reform work at my age is that I discovered in my 30s that doing reform work with anger was exhausting. Doing it with resentment against the people that whom I have felt and continue to feel were really perpetrating harm on others, but pursuing them in a personal way or an angry way rather than in a principled way, trying to improve the world, was really exhausting.
Oh yeah, when you're trying to heal other people by attacking them, even if they don't know it, even with just a judgment thoughts, attack thoughts, you're just setting up a barrier. It's just ego against ego, and even though you are well intentioned and can do good, there's a limitation on the good that you can do. The key to all of this is it doesn't mean that you don't say your truth, but you say your truth in a way that I believe can be heard, or is more likely to be heard, in validating ways where you don't invalidate the other person at the same time that you're trying to educate them or enlighten them or raise them to another possibility. So I think that's the key, is to let go of your ego, let go of your judgment, and when you do so, they're less likely to be defensive, they're less likely to be angry, they're more likely to hear the message and want to cooperate with it. But if they think that you're attacking them, then you're the enemy, and then they want to shoot the messenger, and that doesn't work. So yeah, I think the most effective way to be is through gentleness and through letting go of ego and anger and. The expression "the meek shall inherit the earth." I don't believe that means weak. I think it means those who are gracious, those who are kind and compassionate. You know, those who are grateful. That's the meek that shall inherit the earth. And I believe that survival of the fittest has a new definition now. It's not survival of those who are physically the fittest, those who are more aggressive and violent. It's going to be those who are spiritually fit. That's how this world, that's how this planet's going to endure and thrive and sustain and survive a lot of the problems that we're having is survival of the spiritually fittest. And that's where acceptance and tolerance and compassion and generosity and forgiveness come in. This is critical. We will never heal the planet or heal anything if we don't start with these basics of, as you were saying, that all the prophets talk about forgiveness and acceptance and love. And that's the key, and we can't lose sight of that, even if we disagree with the way people are behaving. If we get violent and aggressive back, if we are full of judgment and attack thoughts, it's just ego versus ego, and it's going to make the whole thing take a whole lot longer.
I think that is absolutely right. What are you finding in terms of the psychiatrists you're meeting nowadays? I don't think, you're talking about winning over people. I'm not sure, I am fairly sure in my own mind, we can't win over psychiatry, no matter how meek or loving or kind we are, because that organization has a vested interest in approaches that are demeaning to human beings, the objectifying of people with diagnoses, the subduing of people with drugs is not something that folks readily give up. But I'm seeing a lot of change in some psychiatrists, and I'm seeing a lot of change in the general public, a huge change in the general public. And what's your sense? Have you got your hand on the pulse of psychiatry to any extent anymore?
Very little. I've pretty much disengaged from the American Psychiatric Association and most of those organizations, because you're right, it's all about money and politics and propaganda, and people are pawns and victims in a big money game that involves the pharmaceutical companies as well. So no, I don't think as a whole psychiatry has moved very far at all. They're still embracing, you know, this biological, pharmacological model of emotional illness, and most of the people that I know who are psychiatrists who I train with, they're still stuck, you know, they're entrenched in what they were taught and programmed to believe and what they're doing. So I don't think we're going to change psychiatry from within. I think we're going to change it like the way you're talking about, is by, you know, by the patients that we deal with, by the books that we write to raise public awareness, by people really going back to the psychiatrist and saying to the psychiatrist, hey, you need to grow up. You know, I'm reading about this book that talks about toxic chemicals and the long-term brain inflammation and what you talk about, the spellbinding stuff, I don't want this anymore. Here, you need to read this stuff that I'm reading, doctor, and help me get off this crap. And that's how we're going to educate and kind of enlighten the psychiatrist, I think, is by pointing out to them what they need to learn, that there's alternative approaches that they need to wake up to. They need to be more open-minded about.
Yeah, that's very much why my book, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, is actually written for the psychiatrist, the therapist, the patient, the family. And I think most times it's going to start with the patient and the family and then be handed to the therapist and the psychiatrist, with the patient saying, I want a different looking service than the one you've been providing. I'd like you to, as you say, grow up and give me a more person-centered, caring approach. In your private practice, do you talk about values? How much is the person who's talking on the radio today with me going to be recognizable to his patients? Are they going to know your views, your values?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not somebody who believes in the idea of, you know, that the psychiatrist should be some kind of blank slate, or the psychiatrist should be not self-disclose. I don't believe that. I believe that as I told you, my path was a circuitous one, you know, away and back to medicine, and I learned a lot about life being out of the ivory tower for a while and just being in the world and learning what it's like to struggle and to have a family when you're and not have money and work, you know, and work hard, you know, and I learned a lot. I have a lot of life lessons that are extremely powerful, and I share these with people when it's appropriate, and my humanity is what I'm basically what I'm teaching. And all of the reading that I've done, like the spiritual stuff, the Course in Miracles, what you're hearing now is my personal philosophy. It's my therapeutic philosophy. You know, much of the depression, the anxiety, the anger, the resentments the irritability, the impulsivity, so much of the reason why people come to psychiatrists has to do with judgments and ego. And being unable to let go of that, and being unable to accept and forgive and let go of the past and let go of the future and be in the now. And so this is what I do teach people, these principles of forgive to win, of get out of your own way, stop sabotaging yourself, free yourself of ego, free yourself of fear, by letting go of all sorts of ego-based ideas, judgments, jealousies, resentments, envy, greed, all this stuff's got to go. So I self-disclose. When it's appropriate, I share my own personal experience, and it works because people recognize that I'm not just giving them some kind of party line. They recognize that I've kind of walked in their shoes, that I know what I'm talking about, that I didn't just sit in a room and read a book about this stuff.
Now, how much do you utilize looking back in the past? I find it very useful at times to help people understand where their self-defeating patterns come from, because I find you can actually help people see the decisions they made when they were tiny kids. And they were looking at the world around them and forming lessons, and sometimes those lessons help them survive as children, you know, withdrawing from mom and dad or hiding in the closet. But well, fighting back, but that those aren't needed as adults, that there are better ways as adults. Do you do that kind of work, too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you that that people developed, got programmed when they were young and developed patterns of survival and patterns of behaving and defenses and ways of interacting in order to kind of survive dysfunctional experiences. And, yeah, and they got locked into that stuff. And so, yes, I do agree. Looking back into the past and looking at those choices and recognizing that as an adult, you can make different choices now. So I totally agree. My approach isn't simply a here and now cognitive approach. It definitely ties into the past. When I say let go of the past, I mean let go of resentments, let go of grudges and grievances and bitterness. But no, you I agree with you. You've got to look at the roots of your behavior, the roots of your choices. Why? Out of fear, mostly, I believe people made emotional choices and then developed habits, and then suddenly it's, oh, I can't help it, that's who I am. Well, no, that's who they became through needing to sort of survive childhood, so to speak. And you look back at that, and you help them to see that, and you help them to see that they're still operating from the same fear zones. The same fear of abandonment they may have had as a child is still operating in the present, and so they're making bad choices, staying in abusive relationships, and that they can see the link to the past, and that they could do it differently now, and that they, you know, and before they may have been dependent, now they're not. Now they're able to take care of themselves, and they can do it. Yeah, that this is how you empower people.
I think one of the really important things about changing ourselves is, and I think this is especially true in dealing with children and dealing with very injured and disturbed people, that are simply coming to accept ourselves so that we're comfortable when another person comes into our space and is very distressed, disturbed, freaked out, and thinks it's the end of the world. Just our being comfortable in ourselves is perceived as being making us safe when we deal with people. And so while you and I are both very high on the thinking, I think we both recognize that the spiritual sense of calm, peacefulness, I call it healing presence, that we bring to a situation is going to be just critical. And the more the person is somebody that would be typically drugged and hospitalized, that is, the more freaked out the person is, whatever diagnosis you want to give, the more that just how we are is going to have a very settling, calming, healing effect. And often fairly quickly, people will come back from being really disturbed to giving a sigh of relief and feeling like they've spent some time in a peaceful way that they can somewhat begin over again. I'm sure you find that that too from the way you're talking.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Is the you know your the therapist's frame of mind, the therapist's yes, comfort with themselves, acceptance of themselves, including their imperfections, translates. It creates I believe all minds are joined. On some level, we're all connected, and you can bring people up to a healthier vibration, one of calm and not fear, one of acceptance, and not rejection or separateness. And so, yeah, you can do this with the mind. And if you are settled, if you are accepting of yourself and in a calm state, that is going to be picked up by the other person. And you're right, then they feel they're in a safe environment. They feel that they're with somebody who's a human being, has a certain amount of level-headedness, a certain amount of stability, and they're going to feel safe and not threatened and not defensive, and then they can open up, and then they can start sharing stuff that they were holding back and were afraid to talk about, and were afraid that maybe if they opened up the box, it would be a Pandora's box that would be full of incredible fears and dramas and traumas and explosive emotions that are uncontrollable. And that's not true. When the therapist sets the tone and there is that feeling of empathy and safeness and calm, the patient has a greater capacity to open up and feel comfortable to share the difficult aspects of their lives, the conflicted feelings they have, the tremendous fears, and a lot of the anger. And then there's a chance to heal all of that.
Sounds like we are on such a similar page, and it's really interesting that some of us with such very different experiences in many ways are moving in this very common direction. I'm finding now, as I did at the Pam Popper's conference, you know, where I met you, that wherever I go now, with very few exceptions, there's only one exception in the last few years, there's just a real welcoming now of a new way of looking that's really a very old way of looking at human beings and bringing that knowledge right into psychology and psychiatry and realizing that it can't work when you're instead sitting back diagnosing and drugging people. I think one of the biggest problems reform in psychology has faced over the years and spirituality has faced and religion has faced is that they've promoted their beliefs, and their beliefs often, you know, for centuries now, going back to Jesus and earlier, have been the kinds of things you and I are talking about today, but they haven't been willing at the same time to say, and this is incompatible with the effects of telling people they have mental disorders and giving them medications. So the entire humanistic psychology movement virtually died because none of the leaders, whether it was Carl Rogers or Eric Fromm or Maslow, names that young people really don't even know anymore, none of them, while they were promoting a caring human view of people, none of them said, and I'll risk some of my professional glow here and authority by saying that psychiatry's on the wrong track. Yeah. And I think that's one reason why my wife and I formed the Center for the Study of Empathic the Therapy, because humanistic psychology, by not being willing to take on the issues that you and I are also talking about, just made itself not irrelevant, but kind of impotent, and set up the society to be taken over by the diagnosers and the druggers.
Yeah, I think, and what's the reason why you're right? So much of great psychology and truth has been lost, and the reason why it's going to come back, and it is coming back, is because this model that you're talking about, this biochemical pharmacological model, isn't working. And you know, when things aren't working, eventually you reach a threshold where people say, okay, insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. Apparently, taking all of these medications for decades doesn't make people happier. It doesn't make them healthier. It doesn't make their relationships more satisfying. It doesn't make the world a better place. And in fact, it's just numbing everybody. We're all a bunch of like zombies and intoxicated on these mind-numbing drugs, and it's not working. And I think so, just like everything, every other system that people have hung on to for profit and greed and glory hasn't worked, and eventually the pendulum swings the other way, and that's what's happening now, too, is people are starting to get it that, hey, this isn't working. We were sold, like, a false bill of goods here. And these drugs, I thought that they were going to save me, and they've actually enslaved me. So it's because it isn't working that we're able to move towards a tipping point in time when we're going to start being the majority of thinkers. We're going to start changing the face of psychiatry. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It has to happen, and because it's the truth. And the truth eventually will find its way into the majority thinking.
It's inspiring on Thanksgiving, this day before Thanksgiving. I have high hopes that we're going to be seeing a switch in the pendulum. I don't foresee utopia. I think that human beings that we have within us, the stuff of that Adam and Eve did, we have the stuff of good and evil, and that it's always going to be struggle here on Earth, and that it begins with us in relation to ourselves, our loved ones, and if we believe, as I do, our relationship with God, it's up to us to to be what we think the world should be, and to know we're going to barely approximate it, being the flawed human beings we are, and accept that it does begin with us, and the ultimate satisfaction has to be, I think, in living that principled life. And then, you know, well, I'm seeing after all these years some really good changes. I've been allowed to live long enough to see some good fruits of what I've been doing and what other people have been doing. But that ultimately, for me, it comes down to how do I want to live? How do I want to encourage people to live? And then the world has its own cycles, and those cycles are not necessarily under my control.
Right.
I give thanks for the opportunity to do what I can do. My expectations, I almost feel like I leave that in the hands of God and fate. Do you know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. There's an expression in the 12-step programs: do the footwork, get out of the results. Which basically is just what you said, is you do your thing, you do your job, you do what's in front of you today, which is to be kind and generous and compassionate, you know, and caring and forgiving and accepting. You do your job, and then you don't get into the expectation of what if this happens, what if that happens, or, you know, this should happen, or why doesn't that happen, or, you know, all those judgments. You just get rid of that. You're just living one day at a time in a place of peace and trying to share that and trying to transform others with love, not by pushing, not by force, only by the force of gentle compassion. And I agree. It's we got to let go of our expectations or our need to change the planet and to make it happen next Tuesday. You know, that's not going to work that way.
On the other hand, I'm always doing this reform work.
That's right.
I'm in trial. I'm in court. I'm taking on the establishment. I'm doing malpractice and product liability cases and speaking truth to power. So I'm in conflict, and I even generate conflict, but I really believe and I really want to do it on the basis of spreading a better view of the world and a better view of how to live and how to be. But it is a struggle for all of us. You know, Ginger and I were talking about that today. We were talking about how we have such resources compared to other people. We have financial resources. We live in a very safe community compared to other people, even in the U.S. We're educated. Our health's pretty good. And we have so much going for us, and yet life is hard for us, too. And think about how hard it is for everyone. But the secrets really do lie in how we view the world and how loving we're willing to be. Walter, that music tells me the time is up. I want to thank Walter Jacob and my friend, the psychiatrist in Los Angeles, for being on my show. Thank you, Walter.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being a great crusader and pioneer.
Thank you.